Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone.
Good morning, folks. Welcome to Democratic Perspective. Steve Williamson here. Karen McClellan sitting across from me.
Good morning, everyone.
And Silent Gary LeMaster is on the phone. Gary?
Good morning, everyone. Happy Memorial Day.
It is Memorial Day. It is time to remember the sacrifices that people have made for this country. And what can we say? We hope that we'll see an end to war. I know that, you know, Plato said that only the dead see an end to war, but I hope we'll see an end to war, and at some point where Memorial Day will be static in terms of the amount of the cost of the casualties and stuff. And we all want to remember everyone. Yeah.
Yeah.
You have an announcement, Karen, before we start?
Just a couple of announcements at the beginning on a couple of upcoming events. Ruben Gallego, who's the Democratic candidate for Senate, who'll be running in 2024, is going to be in Sedona on June 10th. If you go to the Democrats or the Red Rocks website, you can get all the details about where he'll be, and he's doing a meet and greet. It's not a fundraiser, just a meet and greet. You don't have to have your checkbook out to come and meet him. Also, June 16th is the Next Door Breakfast. Secretary of State Adrian Fontes will be the guest for that one. We don't know exactly what he might be talking about, but everything he has to say is always interesting. And the other one is the Democrats of the Verde Valley, up on their next meeting, which is June 1st at 4:30. They're doing a little program about, so if you ever wanted to be a candidate, you know, a little bit of information, what it takes to run as a candidate, starting for the people like city councils, for school boards. We all know that in 2 years we've got city council seats up. We've got school board seats up. We're going to have all the offices for Yavapai County up. So they're going to emphasize on running for office and information if you want to run for one of those campaigns, whether even those that are nonpartisan. So if you're interested in just that's in the back of your mind, because you've got a time to think about it, is go to that meeting on June 1st at the Red Rooster in Cottonwood.
Yeah, it's very important, folks, to consider running even for any position, city council positions can make a
and if you've been following local news, if you're in Cottonwood and you read the Verde Independent, you'll see, like, for example, the Mingus School Board was divided recently about adopting some curriculum, and they, you know, and on the issues we've all talked about here and on some of our shows, you know, issues about critical race theory, about gender studies, all those issues, you know, they were using those sort of conspiracy theories, fake news, to block curriculum. You know, it's not just another place; it's here locally in the Verde Valley. So,
has the right taken over Cottonwood City Council now?
The Cottonwood City Council, I'm not sure about the members, but we know, you know, they've had several meetings discussing that drag show that was in Cottonwood. So all those issues are being discussed here in the Verde Valley. So it's really important that you look at that, and we need good people running for all the city councils in the Verde Valley, all the school boards in the Verde Valley, because we, you know, these ideas are not things that you just read about in some other place. You know, there are people pushing those ideas here in our own communities.
Right. I guess that's the thing that shocked me, was I saw all the Trumpist kind of stuff out in the country, and then we got it here in Sedona. It's in spades. We had a massive Trump movement.
We saw the Proud Boys protesting the drag show in Cottonwood. So it's not just somewhere else. It's here. So you need to look at those local races, most of which are going to be in 2024. So there's plenty of time to look into that, find out how to run. And a lot of those races don't require raising huge amounts of money. So you don't need to be afraid to do it just because you don't have, you know, friends who are going to write you a $1,000 check. They don't always cost a lot of money.
We wanted to talk about prematurely talk about the Republican presidential race. And I guess, Karen, we should talk about DeSantis's terrible flat-footed, back-ended start to the campaign with
Elon Musk.
Yes. a beloved owner of of Twitter that fired almost
everybody,
almost two thirds of the staff, and then DeSantis decided to come on the program and announced on Twitter with Musk, and technical glitches.
Yeah, I guess he thought he wanted to appear more in touch with people who are younger than he is. You know, I can't even say young people, I heard all about it afterwards. I just couldn't believe it. If he should have rented a stage and stood in front of an actual camera instead of trying to do something on Twitter. And I don't know that standing next to Elon Musk gains you a whole lot of cred among any thinking person.
Yeah, because we got a guy who is very good at firing people, and if that's who you want to stand next to. DeSantis has run a campaign, and maybe we all know about it. Maybe Gary can have a comment. That's anti-woke, all the different things that he envisioned. For instance, there are a lot of corporations take into account environmental and social actions when they do their planning. And Disney is one of them. And he got into a terrible fight with Disneyland. So it's DeSantis versus Mickey Mouse, I suppose. Gary?
Yeah I look at this upcoming race or the presidential primary for the Republicans as choosing the most cruel candidate for the country. It seems like, everyone that DeSantis is the kind of the poster child for cruelty, but it seems like every candidate that's running, that's declared for Republican presidential nomination is trying to out-cool the other. And I guess it's unfortunate for the party that Attila the Hun and Genghis Khan and Vlad the Impaler aren't available.
No, they're not available.
They probably get it in a runaway.
DeSantis is creating issues to run against, and a lot of it is political correctness and wokeness. It really sets off the whole thing about pronouns sets people off. The really cruel stuff is the anti-trans stuff. They've gotten off of gay folks and they've switched over to trans folks, and it's this
and
tiny
trans
community.
Kids.
It's 3 million
it's,
people.
It's not 30-year-old or 40-year-old. It's 12-year-old kids who are trans. You know, the one law I guess didn't quite go through in Florida would have allowed the state to declare that it was child abuse if any parent assisted their child, in puberty blocking drugs and other things. They could take the children away. That would destroy whole families, because most of these families with one child who views themselves as trans have other children who are not. So they would destroy whole families because the parents were, in agreement with them and their medical advisors on how they should treat their children, despite the fact that the Republican Party, in other words, always runs on parental rights. And parents know best, and we should give everybody public money to send your child to the private school of your choice, because parents know best. But if you agree that if you agree with your child and you understand and you're going to provide them psychological or medical care if they're trans, then the parents no longer know best. It's just cruel.
It's a small community to attack.
Very small.
Very small.
The
special community
that these people the books that. Include critical race theory. They're not critical race theory, but real history of the United States. Books that are inclusive of gay and lesbian people and trans people. The whole notion that they're basing their cruelty on is that this is a form of grooming children to be gay, to be trans. And to hate their country because of our past slavery, and it's all it's doing is creating great trauma for young people that are gay, that are not, you know, are wondering why they aren't like the other kids around them, trans kids. You know, there's lots of instances of young people, you know, committing suicide because they don't feel like they're accepted and understood. And this is only just, you know, exacerbating that.
And for the Republicans to focus on this is sort of extraordinary. For them to focus on the tiny, tiny communities and minority communities, I guess it's typical. They don't dare focus on traditional.
Yeah, well, they
don't focus. They can't focus on Jews or.
Well, they can't stand up in today's world. Even the Republicans can't stand up and say, make those same kind of comments if you replaced trans child with Jew or black. You know, they can't, though it's all coded, it all means, it's just, they want everybody who's not sort of in the old-fashioned way, who's not a WASP, you know, and maybe they'll make an exception for a few white Catholics, but everybody else should go away and pretend they don't exist. You know, and you can't go back to a world where officially all these people, you could pretend they didn't exist. You didn't have to pay any attention to ethnic minorities, to racial differences, to gender. You know, those people were out in the fringe and you could ignore them. We can't go back to that imaginary world where that was the norm.
So we're looking at
an emotional appeal to Christian nationalists. That's really all it is. It's to find a hook. They have no policies that are popular. When you look at their primary policies with the Second Amendment, with economics, and so on and so on, they're all highly unpopular. Abortion thrown in there as well. They're all highly unpopular. So the only chance for them to win is to single out people and put targets on their backs, like trans people, so they can get this emotional hook to build up their base.
And so you have someone like DeSantis who went to Yale and Harvard running against elites. And elites have become sort of a code word for liberals.
And most of these top-level Republican candidates, commentators and things, all went, you know, have that same kind of quote-unquote elite background. They all came from backgrounds with money, and they all went to highly selective schools and joined highly selected professions and got highly selective degrees before they entered politics.
And now they're running against an image of elites that doesn't really exist, but it's, I guess, all the liberal progressive thinkers and people who are not joining them, they've gotten a lot of mileage. I guess what I see is the main thing they're running against sort of an anti-woke thing.
Mm-hmm.
They're
whatever
running
that
against,
means.
They want to own the liberals,
yeah.
You know. It's the same thing as they always do.
Well,
sounds a little different.
I mean, I think your key word, I'm sure Gary would agree, is they're running against all these things. They're not running for anything.
Yeah, their for stuff doesn't go anywhere.
Let's run on the fear of the other. Mm. And, you know, they're not running for something. They're not running to expand anything. They're not running to talking about health care, to talk about they're not running to actually expand the middle class. You know, they're not even talking about those sort of things. They're running against whatever it is they're running. It's always, I'm running against this. We have to stop this. Not, we need to start this.
They want to run against the whole modern world.
One of the bizarre things is that in a number of the Republican-controlled states, like my old home state of Iowa, they're now dropping the work age so kids can take jobs that they haven't been able to fill. You know, we have a shortage across the country of workers. We're at, you know, as close to full employment as we've ever been. There are way more jobs open than there are people to take those jobs. And so rather than let immigrants in who want those jobs and would work very hard and would help our economy, instead of doing that, they want to put kids to work. You know, we're going back to the late 1800s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, they don't have a lot of stops when it comes like to, you know, like you say, to cruelty or to hurting people. it is true that the country is changing, and they're trying to use that to further themselves. Mm-hmm. So going back to Oklahoma, where I hadn't been in 20 years, and which I left 50 years ago, and going to the areas. The areas that were had been sort of poor white folks and Native American stuff are now Latino, African American, and Asian. So the minorities have changed, and so the inner cities, the transitional areas that we stayed in, if you identify only with being white or Anglo, then things are changing. We went to a park and all the kids were basically Latino or, you know. So things are really changing. And they can use the fact that there are real changes and shifts in the population. And so you have Latino folks basically going into abandoned areas, things we don't have in Sedona or the Verde Valley, and these cities back in Oklahoma have whole areas that have been housing's been abandoned.
And those are changes in some of those areas. Those are changes within the last 20 years. Let's say the increase in Latino populations in some cities. You know, that's always been an issue on border states. Mm-hmm. That's always been a population that's there. But in some of these places in the sort of the quote-unquote heartland, people of, you know, they were, you saw very few of those people 20 or 20 years ago. It's a change in where jobs have occurred and jobs that are open. And that does, I'm sure, make people, you know, look differently as they look back to their own childhoods.
So the cities look different. The whole
thing is that their anger over the changes is misguided, mm-hmm. in my view. That, you know, the problems, excuse me, the grievances and problems that they're facing are not caused by people of color and people of other ethnicities. The problems are caused by big soulless corporations who are trying to squeeze every dime out of them, and by the transfer of people from rural areas into urban. Leaving, you know, the rural people to struggle finding, you know, jobs that pay as much as they think they are due. It's all about the consolidation of corporations and the tax changes that, you know, the tax giveaways to big corporations and the wealthy. That's the source of the problems, not the people of color next to them.
And of course, all of those tax policies were pushed and put into law in effect generally by Republicans in many cases.
Of course.
That's been that was a bedrock of the Republican Party for a long time. So these tax changes, which in past, you know, decades have encouraged companies to go to look at the bottom line and move their manufacturing outside the United States and all of these sort of things that allowed them, were all Republican policies. You know, and that's resulted in you know, economic harm to the people who used to be view themselves as middle class.
Yeah,
I read a report yesterday that in the midst of this whole debt ceiling debacle, where the Republicans want to make cuts, and they're holding the whole economy hostage, I read a report that they already have a plan to cut taxes as soon as the debt ceiling deal is made. So they want to take the Trump tax cuts that led to this growing debt and make those permanent. Now they want to add some others on top of it. So, you know, you've got two ways to deal with debt. One is to cut costs. The other is to increase revenue. Well, they're trying to do both. I mean, they're trying to cut revenue and cut costs. And they want to cut more revenue than they're willing to cut costs.
That's traditional Republican actual strategy.
Yeah, but to the extreme on this time.
So let's take a look at some of the other candidates. I guess the obvious candidate is Donald Trump. DeSantis has been his... stats in the Republican Party have been going way down against Donald Trump. He started up running fairly strongly against Trump, and he's ended up sort of in the basement But that doesn't mean he'll stay there once the campaign gets going, because you're going to have the debate between all these characters. Part of it is, look, folks, Larry Elder is running. He ran against the governor of California in a recall election, lost badly. He's a radio talk host. He's probably in it for publicity. Nikki Haley kind of didn't have anywhere to go after being UN ambassador, and she had a series of Trump-appointed political positions. So she didn't have any position. And so she's running for president. She's one of the more moderate one. Asa Hutchinson, I don't know.
If you can call him Republican moderate.
Yeah, in today's Republican Party terms, yeah.
They're all fascists as far as I'm concerned.
And there's other political commentators who are running basically for the publicity. There's a... I don't know if I can pronounce his last name, but he's an entrepreneur and political commentary. Vivek Ramaswamy. I'm sorry about that. I apologize to everyone. But, you know, again, he's producing his career. Tim Scott is a serious candidate. He's a United States senator. He's the only African-American senator, Republican senator from the South, right?
I think from anywhere. I think he's the only African-American senator at the moment. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's true.
Yeah. Other people, I don't even know who Corey Stapleton is. He's a former Secretary of State of Montana.
Well, there's always people like that. When you think about it, it's actually easier to announce you're running for president officially.
Yeah.
Than it is to announce you're running for governor, because if you're running for governor, you have to get petitions signed. So it's actually easier to sort of get yourself on a list of official presidential candidates, even though when it comes to a primary, the only people that are going to vote for you are your mother and maybe your dog.
Yeah, so we have people like Nikki Haley presenting herself
a serious candidate.
New generation
well,
Republican.
Well, before she worked for Trump, she would have been a rising star in the Republican Party as one of the handful of women elected. She was a governor elected to positions like that. You know, she's Indian American. You know, so she, you know, ticked a number of boxes, and she would have certainly been a rising star in the Republican Party. And then she took a job from Trump, which, of course, you know, damages her credibility, I think, with some Republicans, not with everybody. And I doubt if she really appeals to the Trump Christian nationalist base, because that's not her background.
She's just not extreme enough to actually appeal to the Trump-based folks or the anti-Trump right, far right.
Yeah.
I think neither of them will particularly attract.
A decade ago, she would probably have been the person everyone would have been talking about as a vice presidential candidate.
Yeah.
For the Republican Party, but in the last decade, things have changed.
So, you know, folks, people run for president for a lot of reasons, for publicity, to further their careers, because things have just played out for them. And they run because they're serious and have a chance to be the president, presidential nominee of the Republican Party. So, you know, DeSantis certainly is running a serious campaign. He's raised millions and millions of dollars, despite the fumbling start to his official campaign.
He's already run commercials on television as well.
Yeah. And I understand Tim Scott is now, so has, you know, people are donating to him. I mean, he's got an organization. You know, I presume Nikki Haley probably does this as well, to some degree, has, you know, actual, you know, employees and people who are trying to run their campaigns, you know, though they're not going to be the primary winners, but then again, people don't always run knowing, you know, they run for the exposure, so next time around they can run for something else. Yeah.
And they run because for being vice president too.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a reason to run and lose gracefully to the to the front runner. It gives you a chance of being a vice president. Certainly look at what happened in the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
A raft of Republicans that are considering running but haven't declared, like Pence and Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio and Kristi Noem and Greg Abbott and Vladimir Putin and Kim Jong-un and Xi Jinping. You know,
all of those people. Yeah,
they're kind of holding off.
Be dictators. So.
Yeah. And we know of the ones you mentioned, obviously, if Mike Pence declared to run, he would start out with a big boost because there's nobody who doesn't know him. Yeah, some of those other people you mentioned, you know, who are the people who governors often run for president and some governors get elected. But at the beginning of their campaigns, usually nobody knows much about them except the people in their own state. But that's, you know, there's been a number of people who, you know, then gather the momentum as things go by. But usually they don't have somebody like Trump already in the mix, sort of drawing the air out of the room.
Yeah, I think that's what's happened.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the people that Gary's talking about that you'd think would be in the race now, why isn't Ted Cruz declared and out there running? Because I think he thinks his chances against Trump and DeSantis is pretty small.
Yeah.
Rubio doesn't want to be little Marco anymore.
Yeah,
and so Rubio's not running, for example. And Cruz, two people you'd expect to run.
And Mike Pence again in the same.
Mike Pence,
Are people who, I'm sure when Mike Pence accepted the vice presidential, offer from Trump, he had in the back of his mind to run for president in 8 years. I doubt if he foresaw what would happen in that 4 year period, that, how that would affect his own personal political future. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he may be waiting in the wings to see how things play out because he has that whole evangelical backing.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, a lot of people credit him with saving our democracy. I don't believe it's entirely true, but I don't think he deserves all that much credit for it.
He did act ethically in a situation where he could. If he had acted
unethically,
we would have been in a terrible, worse mix than we are now.
Yeah.
But he also sat by for 4 years and blessed all of Trump's cruel excesses cloaked them in the veneer of religiosity.
He might be hoping that if Trump ends up with a few more serious indictments in between now and the end of the year, when the primary starts,
which is almost certain.
Yeah, if that happens, then maybe he's sort of waiting in the wings to be the sort of white knight savior compromise candidate. Everybody will fall in line behind.
That kind of makes sense as a strategy for him and also for some of the other candidates.
And that might apply to some of the other candidates thinking that same thing, is once Trump adds a few more indictments, will the party turn away completely?
They have to be
publicly.
Far right. They have to be right-wing, and they have to hate liberals as one of their major campaign issues. But there's a lot of air sucked out of the room between Trump and DeSantis getting in and being the Trump who's not Trump. So that it makes it a difficult position to get into a race, I think.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we'd see Rubio and Cruz and Pence in the race now.
At least they're exploring
it. We don't see them. No. There's a reason for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gary, I know you...
Some of them are just plain unelectable. I think, for example, there's been some talk of Greg Abbott, governor of Texas, but after Uvalde and the abortion laws in Texas and his pushing of all these extreme measures, I don't think he's even remotely electable. I really don't think DeSantis is either, but you also have some people sitting out there like Mike Pompeo. I think he's pretty damaged from being a Trump gopher. It's Vladimir Putin probably has a better chance than most of them.
It's a difficult situation if you're a Republican trying to run, because between Trump and the leading anti-Trumps, there's not a lot of space. And you have to be extremely right-wing in order to get the nomination.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or get any position. If you want to be governor of Texas, you've got to be a right-wing extremist. You've got to take grandstanding positions. You've got to double down on things like abortion. But then you've got to go and run for a presidential race. You've got a problem.
Yeah, you can't. I don't think you don't become. You can't become president if all the people that support you are that real solid you know, we love Trump base. But you, on the other hand, you can't win if you don't have their support. You know, somebody there's a calculus on the national level once you get out of that primary. You need more than the Trump base to win. But if they stay home and sit home, you're not going to be able to win. So it's kind of weird, you know, calculus. I'm sure a lot of these Republican candidates who themselves are not as far to the right as Trump or DeSantis are personally, and would be equally happy in a. Yeah, somewhat more moderate party.
Yeah, let me ask you both, Gary and Karen. Do you think that Trump's going to be able to stay in the race, that his legal problems will bring him down so he won't be able to run, or do you think he'll be able to stay in this race and probably win, which now, according to polling, would happen?
Go ahead, Gary.
If the DOJ has the spine, I hope it does, and I think it does, I think he'll be facing some severe indictments. I think it's very likely that from all appearances that the Georgia case may come first, an indictment there. And then the recent developments with the classified materials at Mar-a-Lago make it almost impossible not to indict him for that. So that's gonna change things. Question is, to the base, does the base double down? And after he was indicted in New York, his ratings flourished.
And so, huge contributions.
There's a lot in the air right now.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. And Trump himself, I mean, he would, if he was, the justice system doesn't move very fast after he's indicted with his own lawyers and all, appeals and various things. He's not going to see probably an actual court date on most of those cases until long after the primaries are decided. Because the system, has so many ways to stall and things like that. But I would think if that wasn't the case, he could actually be sitting there in an orange jumpsuit in a jail cell, and he will still say he's running for president. He's never going to withdraw from the race. And some of those people will keep supporting him. The difference is, will other people making that calculus of, I really like Trump, so I'm going to pick the person who I think has his views, like DeSantis, because we can't have a candidate who's going to be in jail.
Yeah.
And I think, does that happen? When does that happen? Who knows? That would, and the shift would probably be to the more the most Trump-like, the most person using all these social issues to, scare everybody to death.
If they get to the debates before the indictments, or serious indictments, he may end up damaging the other candidates so badly. Yeah. That, they'll have trouble being elected. There's been discussion over how many candidates are going to be allowed to debate, because the feeling was that Trump really only flourished in 2016 because there were so many candidates on the debate stage, and he could draw all the air out of the room and attack them and do his whole shtick like he did with the CNN supposed town hall.
And he's extremely good at that, I must say.
Just dominate.
Yeah. That.
I think that somebody asked me, a Republican, who Democrats would prefer for a presidential candidate. And I said, well, we don't like any of them. And having Trump run, he spews out so much hate and so many lies and misinformation. Mm-hmm. Just having him out there is a negative. On the other hand, he probably has less chance of winning the election than maybe some of these other candidates that might emerge. I don't know what you guys think.
It's hard because there's a difference between which Republican survives and has support come the Republican nomination, and who could win. There's sort of, in a national race, there are, different questions. Questions there as to how, but Trump as a candidate, even assuming he doesn't even get the nomination, but he's going to be up there on that stage, wherever the convention is, speaking. I mean, he's not going to, and he's going to continue to talk after. And he does just reinforce this hatred that we see trickling down to other areas. I mean, that's the things. I mean, if you ask somebody 3 years ago if they thought that because they ran for their small town city council or a small town school board that anybody would actually go online and threaten death and destruction to them, they would have said, oh, nobody cares. Nobody does that. You know, we're all friends in our little town. But now those people, and Trump has helped accelerate that by what he says.
The right
and
is
what he does.
Laws that so a single person can object to a book.
Yeah,
for example, but
even
a case in Florida where a single woman who is connected with the far right objected to a book by the the woman
Gorman, she objected to a book that is basically the poem that was read at Biden's inauguration.
So they banned it.
But I'm just thinking also just the candidates and people running this whole thing. I mean, once you know the internet helps spawn these people feel they can sit in their basement and say cruel and hateful things about people, but Trump helped to accelerate that and make that sort of okay to.
Absolutely.
Nasty names to your opponents and lower the tone of discourse down to, I don't think even kindergartners would be ashamed at the level of discourse sometimes.
He brought it to the surface. Another big variable, I think, is what will the media do? You know, and in 2015, 2016, for example, the KPHO in Phoenix, you know, Trump kicked off his campaign very early in Phoenix and had a rally there. And, you know, KPHO and others absolutely fawned all over him. And they, you know, their 10 o'clock newscast, they devoted like 20 minutes to Trump and to his rally. Well, a couple of weeks later, Bernie Sanders came to Phoenix. He had a much larger attendance at the rally.
Yeah.
And they gave him, I counted about 20 seconds of airtime on the 10 o'clock news. So it wasn't just KPHO, it was the networks. Everybody treated him that way. They went out of the way to give him, you know, treat him with kid gloves and give him a lot of airtime.
And of course
He was also good television.
CNN this time around. So, you know, what's going to happen with the rest?
Yeah, because some of the media back in 2015, early 20, sort of viewed Trump as the outlier joke candidate. You know, he was good television. He said things that people could hate, and so
he had been an interesting character in New York for a long time,
and a media maven for a long time. And my reason in that is that even the Huffington Post sort of put him on their entertainment section when he first started running. They did, so people gave him a lot of airtime because they thought nothing would happen. And I guess I've heard comments from some of those other people up on the stage, those Republicans who never rose above a couple points in the polls. I don't remember which ones. They're now sort of saying, we thought it was a joke. We thought he'd be there in a debate or two and then he'd fade away because he was so obviously a joke from other Republicans. And of course, that didn't happen. And the media continued to give him that same amount because I think some of them, even to the very end, well, look at Fox News and what we found out there. The Fox News hosts hated the guy. They didn't like him. They thought he was a joke. They didn't think he was a serious candidate.
But they pushed him anyway.
But they continued to push him, and they pushed him all the way through and after 2020.
Yeah. And they pushed his lies, even though they didn't believe him.
Yeah, yeah. So a lot of those media people, you know, were saying things that they didn't believe a word of. Yeah.
About him winning the election. They didn't believe a word of it. In fact, this is the people who were promoting all the scoundrels who were supporting those ideas, people who supported them and funded them and put them on the air didn't believe a word that they were saying.
And
we found that out later.
Yeah, yeah.
I think CBS chairman, you know, former chairman of CBS and the CEO, Les Moonves, really kind of wrapped it up by saying, Trump may not be good for America, but he's damn good for CBS.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's good ratings.
He's good ratings. He's good television. He's fun to watch. He's exciting. serious candidates are maybe not so much fun.
No, lots of them aren't that fun. There's a lot of people. Somebody was making comments like with commentator about DeSantis. DeSantis does not have that rhetorical style when he speaks. I don't know. I haven't listened to a whole speech of his, so I don't that he's not an exciting speaker.
No, he's sort of a dull speaker.
What he does, but yeah.
So he's got to hang in there for quite a while against and hope Trump sort of burns himself out.
Yeah.
Or if Trump wins, he gets to be vice president. I don't know what his thinking is. He's certainly an ambitious man.
Yeah,
and
but he's
certainly willing
to be
sanctimonious
as
vice president.
No, he's still governor of Florida. I mean, he's just still Steve.
Yeah, and he's written the law now that he can stay governor of Florida, even though he's running for president.
Yeah, so if he doesn't, he will just go back to being governor of Florida. Then who knows
the law's
what
been
else.
Adjusted.
Yeah.
In
well,
his favor.
Trump always has Carrie Lake out there in the background to ask to be his vice president because she's she doesn't believe she lost the governor's race. She's lost every time she's tried in court and the sort of last effort she still says she's trying to appeal it. She wants her case before the Supreme Court. I'm not sure that she has a legal path to that, but she's still refusing to accept that she, lost the race for governor of Arizona. So she'd make she's the opposite, nice pair with Trump. They got the same viewpoints.
Mm. I wonder if I was Trump.
They've lost the same number of court
cases,
I think.
Yeah, Trump might have lost a few more, but she's lost everyone she's been, and that's for sure. Yeah, but she's not verbally giving up. Yeah, she's still out there fighting. Yeah,
I think though that she's. I mean, her lawyers are being fined and so forth because their arguments are ridiculous.
One of her lawyers, the highest profile person who had something to do with her case, Dershowitz, who was nationally known lawyer, is trying to say, he doesn't want to get fined if they issue sanctions against her lawyers and there's something ongoing at the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
He wants them back and say, oh, not me, I didn't understand what I was getting into, I didn't know what I was doing, when he's a lawyer that's been associated with dozens of high profile national cases and he's trying to to weasel his way out of getting any financial slap for.
Wasn't he part of OJ's dream team?
He was part of OJ's dream team. He's written books. I mean, he's a nationally known lawyer that you pretty hard to sort of say I didn't understand what I was being asked to do.
It's ridiculous.
But like I said,
we're getting to run out of time, folks. Tune in. We want you to tune in next week. We're going to have a great show for you. It's a difficult topic, particularly this early in the race, but we wanted to look at it because the Republican presidential race is already beginning to set up, and we're already beginning to see some of the structure of what will happen. Now, none of us can really predict with as many candidates as we see at as much time what will happen. Gary, we got 2 minutes. You got a last word? okay.
This topic is really reprehensible to me because I think they're all fascists and I think I've been reading a lot of books about the founding of our nation and I got to say that I wish George Washington was still around because he hung people for less than what Trump did.
I know. At the Whiskey Rebellion, he wanted to shoot them all, and they wouldn't let him. They said, no, we can't do that.
Yeah.
It's amazing what he's gotten by with. And I saw an interview yesterday with, I think it was the head of Vote That, who just was appalled that the head of the Oath Keepers got off with 18 years.
I don't think that's
way too little for what he did.
Yeah.
He really committed treason.
Committing treason, folks, in the United States is really, really hard to prove. It's very strict. The founders were really worried about the charges of treason being used. We got to wrap this up. Tune in next week. VVID.org. All our shows, including this one, are podcast on the radio within a couple of days.
You've You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.